Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fire in His Embrace by Ruby Dixon. Narrated by Noel Bridges and Jeremy York. 1. Emma.
No one expects the apocalypse to be quiet. At least I never did. But it's the thing that continues to surprise me the most, the silence of it all. When you grow up in the city, you expect to hear sounds. The hum of electricity, the muffled chug of a distant train. Cars, dogs barking, someone playing their radio far too loud. You hear people and their things, people living, laughing, existing. That's all gone in an apocalypse. Now the power's long gone and there's no endless hum. The cars are dead. The dogs have wandered away and all the people who used to live in the city, most of them are dead too. Even though the silence is unnerving, you eventually get used to it. Until it's not so silent anymore. And that's when you get worried. I'm used to the silence myself. It's become a good thing. Silence means there's no dragon taking flight overhead, roaring and flaming. It means there are no people nearby. It means I'm left alone, with nothing but peace and quiet for company. Tonight, it's not so quiet, though. I hear the distant cranking sound of a motorcycle long before it arrives, and the sound's almost offensive in the peaceful night. I clutch my baseball bat, my best friend now that my gun is gone, and move silently to the window of my gas station. There's no gas, and I've posted signs to that effect, but I figured someone would come check anyhow. I know I would, if it was me. Sure enough, a motorcycle roars up, and then another. My heart drops when I see it's a full fleet of motorcycles, because that can only mean one thing. Nomads. Nomads don't live in one of the forts. They're lawless, outlaws who can't obey the simple rules of after society. They're usually dicks, take what they want, and that includes women. This means I'm in danger if they find I'm here. Fuck. Not what I wanted. I think of the store down the road, where Sasha's sitting cozy with her dragon. I wish I was there with them. Sasha's offered, but I never felt comfortable. I regret it now. I watch through the grimy, dark window as one of the men leaps off his bike and moves to the gas pump. He pulls the nozzle free and sniffs it, then squeezes the trigger. Nothing comes out, of course. It's dry, just like my fucking sign says. Dumbass. But he jiggles the handle again, then inspects the pump and calls something out to his buddies, waiting to refuel their bikes. I peer at them, trying to count. There are at least 7 bikes with tandem riders. 14 people. I see a van, too. Fuck. I clutch my bat tighter, my pulse racing with alarm. They haven't looked in here, but if they do, they'll see me. There's not much left in this old gas station. No food, just a bunch of empty, trashed shelves that I've pushed to the side to make room for my bedding. I can hide, of course, but the moment they see my bedroll, they'll know someone's here. I watch, alert, as one of the bikers moves to the side of the gas station, probably to test the emergency shutoff. It's not going to help things, though. I did the same when I got here. This place is dry as a bone. I brace myself when someone comes toward the door. I've got it chained shut on the inside. I'm not a dumbass. And I clench my teeth, waiting as they try the handle. A moment later, someone else approaches, and they throw a rock through the glass door, shattering it. Fuck. I rise up in my corner, clutching my bat, ready to attack. The man reaches through, tugs on the chains to undo them, and then tosses them to the floor. Another guy pushes the door open and strolls in, wearing a baseball cap. His stance is so familiar, I can hardly believe what I'm looking at. Until he turns and sees me at the same moment I see him. Boyd? I say, shocked. His eyes widen, and I realize it's him, all right. I'd recognize that heavy brow anywhere. Not to mention the unshaven, straggly beard and the wide face. When he grins, I see the one broken tooth that always gapes out, a reminder that there's no dental care in the after. It's my brother, all right. I don't know if I'm relieved or terrified.
The fuck? Emma? What are you doing here?
My brother's look is openly skeptical. Squatting, dumbass. What's it look like I'm doing? He breaks out into a grin.
Fucking hell, I thought you were heading to Fort Orleans.
Change my mind. I don't point out that I lied to him. Boyd's got a sensitive ego. Was going to check out Fort Dallas, but word is that they're not the friendliest, so I thought I'd hang on my own for a while.
Well, you ain't alone no more,
my brother says, grinning.
You're with my crew now.
He gestures at the fleet of bikes behind him.
Me and the boys will take care of you.
That's kind of what I'm afraid of, especially since my brother's smile doesn't reach his eyes. But he's the devil I know, so I beam at him as if this is a relief. Great!
Bregaste cajita de pollo,
as my dad used to say. Boyd fucked me over once, and I won't forget. I've never been extremely close to my brother Boyd. He's a lot like my dad in all the bad ways, and my dad beat my mom on a regular basis when we were kids. Both mom and dad died in the rift when the dragons first descended, and that left me and Boyd to fend for ourselves. Boyd was 14 and I was 12, so we hitched along with other survivors and tried to make a living in Fort Tulsa. Unfortunately, that place was a real shithole run by the worst kinds of scum. When I was 16, my brother got us booted because he sold me in a card game to an old toothless fucker, and I responded by beating the shit out of the guy with my bat. That didn't go over well with the locals, and we ended up having to run out of the city. After that, we wandered on our own for a while, and then eventually found Jack. I don't think that was his real name, but he referred to himself as Jack of All Trades, and so we just called him Jack after a while. He was a tiny guy with pale skin, glasses, a wiry build, and a bald head. He was a prepper, and that's why he was surviving so well in the apocalypse. He felt bad for me and Boyd and took us in. That went great for a few months, until Boyd got bored, robbed Jack blind, and left in the middle of the night with most of our stuff, including Jack's valuable guns. I hadn't seen my brother since, and that was years ago. Jack's been gone these last 18 months or so, and I'm alone. And somehow I've managed to get stuck with my shitty, no-good brother once more. Damn. After they've confirmed that I'm telling them the truth, and the gas station is indeed dry, the fleet of bikes heads off, and I have no choice but to go with them. Boyd makes the guy sitting behind him give me a spot, and so I ride behind my brother while he shouts into the wind, telling me what he's been up to. Apparently, he got kicked out of another fort in between now and the time he left me and Jack. He doesn't tell me the name of the fort, of course. My brother likes to keep his secrets, and I imagine whatever he did to get kicked out was pretty freaking bad. I don't ask for more details. After he got booted, he hooked up with his current crew of nomads. Azar's gang, he calls them. Who's Azar? I ask. Weird freaking name. He foreign? My brother just laughs.
He's some weird fucking albino, but he's a tough son of a bitch. You don't mess with him. I'll introduce you later.
Great. I can hardly wait. One of the bikes starts to sputter, low on fuel, so the bikes all pull into the parking lot of an old chain hotel. I get a funny feeling in my gut because the place looks relatively clean and neat, and there's a cardboard sign on the door that reads, "Keep out. No trespassers." I smother my objections when a few of the thugs go into the hotel, guns in hand. What can I do? Get shot in the head, too? Luckily, the people inside, three old men, an old woman, and a couple of kids, give up their home without a fight. They're chased, sobbing, into the night, and I have to harden my heart against them. They'll find protection somewhere else. Hopefully. It's at least a day or so from the next dragon attack. Again, hopefully. I focus on watching the others in the nomad band. I don't see many women with this group. In fact, I only see two, and both are twice my age and could be someone's mom if it weren't for the slutty tops they're wearing and the way they're hanging on the men. That's all right. A girl's gotta get her safety in the after any way she can. No judging. But this could be dangerous for me, considering that I'm the only young female in the group. Maybe the fact that I'm Boyd's sister will keep me safe. Huh. I keep a hand on my knife belt and think longingly of my baseball bat that I had to leave behind. These thugs look like any other nomad bunch in the after. Dirty, ruthless, and brutal. I've no doubt they've murdered and pillaged their way here, because I've dealt with their kind a dozen times before. The thing I can't figure out is this Azar guy. The leader of most nomads is usually the most savage one of the bunch, the most bloodthirsty. He'll be the first one to use his gun and the last one to put it away. So I'm a little confused when Azar stays inside the van while the others go raiding the hotel. It's not until the place is cleared out that one of the nomads heads back to the van and knocks on the back window that he emerges. And then I try not to stare. Boyd said Azar was an albino. Maybe he is, but there's something about the way he moves that's a little too creepily familiar. I've seen those strange, fluid movements before. I just don't know where. He's covered in fabric from head to toe, like a post-apocalyptic Berber of some kind, and he's wearing sunglasses. For all his weirdness, though, the others are deferential to him, opening the door so he can go inside and then rushing after him, as if this guy's approval is all they want in their lives. So stinking strange. Boyd bounds up to me and gestures at the hotel.
Come on, we're staying here for a while. Looks like pretty sweet digs. Nicely stocked food pantry and everything.
Super! I try to sound more enthusiastic than I am. So, what's with this Azar guy? Boyd just grins.
You'll see soon enough. Quit asking, Chota.
Sure, I'll quit asking as soon as I get some answers. I get a room of my own inside. I suppose that's a plus. It's next to Boyd's, but it's got a lock and deadbolt. And inside there's a chair that I can shove under the doorknob to make sure no one can get in. Already, I don't like the way some of the guys are eyeing me. But I'm onto their kind. No one's going to take me by surprise in a dark corner. I'm not that kind of fool. The After beat that out of me long ago. 2. Emma. The next morning, someone pounds on my door obscenely early. I glance blearily at the hint of rose-colored dawn sky in the dirty window, and then fling myself from my musty bed to pull the door open a crack. It's my brother, Boyd.
What?
I ask, even as I fake fighting back a yawn.
It's fucking early.
Rule number one of dealing with Boyd and his buddies, you never seem afraid. Doesn't matter that my pulse is hammering and I'm about to break out into a cold sweat. As long as I look chill, I'm good.
Yeah, well, Azar wants his breakfast.
I squint at him. So why are you coming to me?
You're a chick. Go cook something for him.
He shrugs. Is he serious? I'm a girl and therefore on kitchen duty?
Culo.
At first I think he's joking, and then when he continues to stand in front of my door looking impatient, I realize he's truly not putting me on. I've been assigned kitchen duty. I think about telling him no, and then I think about Azar, and how weird and creepy he is, and how everyone follows whatever he wants without question. Give me 5 minutes to get ready.
Make it snappy.
He bangs a fist on my door, and then wanders down the hall. I snatch my clothes up from the floor and put them on, sniffing them. My rose perfume, the only staple other than a weapon in the After, has faded. So I put the clothes on and re-spritz myself. For the longest time, I used deer urine to disguise my scent. It's one of the things that Jack taught me. Dragons snatch people away because they smell them, and so I need to make sure a dragon can't smell me. I think they just snatch women because I've never seen a guy get carried away by a dragon, but Jack always masked his scent just to be on the safe side. I do now, too. And ever since meeting Sasha and her dragon, I've been using rose perfume, since she says that it masks the scent just as well, and smells a hell of a lot better. I douse myself, slip on my shoes, and then race out the door where Boyd's waiting down the hall.
Come on,
he says curtly.
I'll show you where the kitchen is. Stocked pretty good here. Make sure Azar's breakfast is fancy, too. He likes high-quality shit, no fucking Pop-Tarts or shit.
Right, because there are so many Pop-Tarts lying around in an apocalypse. Hell, I'd give my right arm for a Pop-Tart right about now. Screw giving it to Azar. But I listen quietly as my brother chats. That's the thing with Boyd. He's a dumbass and a ruthless sort, But he also runs his mouth because he wants you to know just how clever he thinks he is. He tells me all about how he hooked up with Azar's men last year, how he didn't think too much about Azar at first, but then he saw the guy tear someone's throat out with his hand and thought that was badass. Says Azar prefers to be the brains of the operation, though, and he's got some great ideas. He's taken them a lot of places and gotten them more loot than they ever thought they'd get, and isn't interested in taking much for himself.
Except magazines, my brother says. Guy loves magazines.
Magazines, huh? Azar sounds like a weirdo to me, but he's a weirdo with a bunch of dangerous followers. So I keep my mouth shut. I'll keep that in mind. The kitchen is pretty well stocked, and I spend a few minutes going through items, checking out everything and fiddling with knobs. The stove's gas, but there's no gas, naturally. But I'm used to that at this point. I find an empty sink, make a fire with some charcoal that someone's brought in, and cook over it. I'm surprised that there's some non-moldy flour, and so I make pancakes, along with a few strips of spam that I fry up in the pan. I open a can of fruit cocktail and dress everything in a few nice dishes and hope that'll do. In my eyes, it's a feast, but who knows what a guy like Azar is used to. A little bell rings from inside the dining room. Is he fucking shitting me? A bell? But the women in the kitchen jump to action, as if we're being timed or something. All right, then. I put Azar's breakfast on a tray and send it out with one of the older ladies, then get to work making a batch of pancakes for the rest of the crew. My brother comes in a short time later.
Azar says his breakfast was good. You're in charge of cooking for him from now on.
He looks pleased. What if I turn the job down? I ask, flipping a pancake in the skillet I'm holding over the fire. It's still smoky in the kitchen despite the fact that I've got the windows open, and I have to bite back a cough. Maybe I don't want to spend the rest of my life cooking for your little BC Young Gale buddies.
You're here because I'm protecting you. Trust me, Emma. You don't want to get on the bad side of these guys.
He pats my back as if that answers things, and then frowns as he sees the skillet in my hands.
What are you doing?
Cooking up more pancakes? I give him a weird look. You know, remember the part where you just said I got the job as cook for everyone despite not volunteering? He shakes his head, eyes wide.
Fuck no, Em. I said you cook for Azar. Let these old bitches cook for everyone else.
I look over at the old bitches who were doing the dishes in the kitchen with a few buckets of water, but they don't seem bothered by his insulting words.
We can't eat the same thing Azar gets. His has to be better.
Boyd shoots a nervous look out the door to the kitchen and then grabs the plate of fresh-cooked pancakes and dumps them in the fire. What the fuck? I swallow my protest and force myself to shrug, even though that's a mountain of food. Leaders are peculiar, and Azar looks more peculiar than most. If he wants to be the only one eating good food, we don't have much of a choice. What if I say we burned these and we eat them anyhow? I ask, offering Boyd the tongs. He thinks for a moment and then nods, helping me fish what we can out of the fire. It's obvious to me that we're going to stick around this place for a while when no one makes any effort to prep and leave. That's the nomad's way. You find a place, squat on it or steal it from someone else, and then leave when it runs out of supplies. They're like the locusts of the apocalypse. Or we are like the locusts of the apocalypse, I guess, since I've been unofficially dragged in with the nomads. I want to leave, but I'm smart enough to know that it's not a choice. Being on your own in the after is a death wish for most folks, and I doubt anyone would believe me when I tell them that I'm fine on my own. Boyd won't want me to leave either. If I up and leave on my own, they're going to assume I stole something and come after me anyhow. Like it or not, I'm here until they kill me or kick me out. Or until I figure out how to escape without getting myself killed. So I prepare. While the others lounge around and play cards during the daytime, or go hunting for more fuel for their bikes, I dig through the empty hotel rooms. Most of them don't have anything salvageable, but I do manage to find some clothing and shoes. I score a pocket knife and a few lighters, and I tuck those between the mattresses on my bed, because I have no doubt Boyd will take them from me if he finds them. I make sure that I have a weapon on me at all times. I'm covered head to toe with clothing because I don't want anyone saying I invited the attention of some douchebag nomad rapist. And I wait. I watch and wait, which is one of the most important things you can do when surrounded by the enemy. I'm not stupid. Even with my brother here, these men aren't my friends. Boyd would sell me out in a heartbeat if he thought I'd get him ahead. He has in the past, after all. To him, I'm only valuable as long as I'm useful. As long as I know that, I can be smart and safe about things. I lock my doors every night, barricade it well, and sleep with a knife in my hand. I don't go anywhere alone, and I make it a point not to talk to anyone unless I have to. I can survive this. I just don't realize how much shit I'm in until the day I meet Azar. I do my best to stay off his radar as much as possible. I'm not hot or sexy by most standards, but I'm young, and I've got tits and all my teeth. And that's enough for most guys. I know that if Azar demands that I show up in his bed, I'm going to have to go or end up with a bullet in my head. So I make it a point to not draw attention to myself. I make his food every meal and always send it out with one of the other old ladies who would love nothing more than the boss's attention. I don't socialize at night, and I keep to my room. I manage to stay unnoticed for an entire week before the hammer comes down. Boyd approaches me after dinner one night. It's one of my better meals, I like to think. There's only so much you can do with beanie weenie and canned corn. Tonight we had fresh deer, and I grilled it up perfectly and sliced it thin, then spiced the heck out of everything. Managed to put it out before Azar rang that stupid, annoying little bell too many times.
You're doing good, sis.
Boyd tells me happily, as if he's invested in my success.
Azar wants to say hello to you.
I pause, a flare of alarm going up. That's not necessary.
I know it ain't, but come on.
He locks an arm around my shoulders and leads me out of the kitchen into the dining room that I make it a point to never go into. I'm not entirely surprised to see that the room is cleared out of most of the furniture. It's stacked in corners, and the tables are pushed away except for one large one in the center of the room. Chairs have been neatly set on all sides, and a white linen tablecloth covers the tabletop. It looks fancy, right down to the vase of fake flowers as the centerpiece. A man sits there alone, his back to us. Even inside, he's wearing a hat and swathes of clothing, including what looks like a duster jacket.
This here's my sister,
Boyd says, pushing me forward.
She's thrilled to be with us.
I stumble toward the table and take a few more brave steps forward, determined to look as unaffected as possible, despite the fear lodged in my throat. I don't know this guy. He might be like every other bandit out there who just wants to rape and steal and murder. If so, I know what to expect. But then he turns and glances over at me, and I freeze in place. This guy is an albino. He's a dragon. I know what a dragon looks like when he assumes human form. I've seen it before. When they're human, they have this strange sort of scale pattern on their skin and strangely thick hair that's the same color as the skin. That's fine and all, and I guess it could pass for human if you haven't met another dragon before. But it's the eyes that give it away. Azar's eyes are as pale as the rest of him, with only his black pupils providing any sort of pigmentation. It makes him look like he's got small, beady pupils, and adds to the creepy factor. His nostrils flare slightly as Boyd pushes me forward, his hand on my back.
Emma's just shy,
Boyd explains.
Fucking say hi, Emma.
Hi, I manage, trying not to stare. That nostril flare thing, I know I've seen that before. Sasha's boyfriend would do that every time I came close. Dragons are sensitive to scent, and I'm coated in rose perfume to disguise mine. Azar tilts his head, studying me. He looks over at Boyd pointedly.
I'll just be outside,
my brother says. And then I'm alone with Azar. Shit. The dragon gestures at one of the chairs at the table, inviting me to sit with him. Crap. I guess I can't turn him down. I pull the chair out and sit on the edge of the seat, trying to look confident and bored. Probably failing miserably, too.
Do I make you nervous?
He asks, and there's a hint of an accent in his voice. I'm also surprised at how fluid his English is. Sasha's dragon didn't speak much at all, and when he did, it was broken and guttural. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's not a dragon. Maybe I'm just crazy. I force myself to shrug. I am a woman alone. I'm always nervous.
Your brother is here.
I shrug again. He chuckles, and the sound is so smooth and urbane that I doubt myself again. Looks-wise, he could be a dragon. Personality-wise, I don't know.
You are clever not to trust. Do not worry, though. I have told my men that they cannot touch you without my permission.
What about my permission? I ask, irritation breaking through my fear.
But they care about my permission, not yours.
He's not wrong, damn it. So why am I here? So we can establish the rules of when you give your permission?
Smart. I like that.
He clasps his hands on the table and laces his fingers. I try not to stare, but his nails are thick and weird. They're cut short, but they look strange. Inhuman. Doc, Sasha's dragon, had claws. I avert my eyes and stare at my own hands. I don't know what he'll do if he knows what I suspect.
You will be safe with my men as long as you please me,
Azar says. Here it comes. I clench my jaw, then give him a stiff look. So I'm gonna be your whore instead of everyone else's? His nostrils flare again.
Not quite. You will continue to make my meals. Let the other filthy females tend to the rest of my men.
He waves his hand absently.
Beyond that, I have no need for your services.
I'm surprised.
Except one.
I should have known. What's that? He studies me again, pale eyes narrowed. I keep waiting for his eyes to swirl like Doc's do, but they don't. They just look strange and creepy.
Are you mating with any of the men here?
What? No. I make a face. The quickest way to get in trouble is to hop beds. Plus, the men here are the definition of unappealing. Also, mating? Not fucking? Not sleeping with? Not having sex? My dragon meter pings again.
Good. Remain that way. As for your perfume, tonight I ask that you bathe and not wear it.
My throat goes dry. Because you want me to sleep with you?
No. I require your clothing, the small ones you wear under your pants.
My panties? Is he fucking serious? He nods.
You will provide those to me in the morning. No perfume.
Okay, maybe he's not a dragon. Maybe he's just a panty-sniffing pervert. 3. Emma. I don't find out what's going on with my panties for days. At first, I think it's just more weirdness from Azar, and make sure to keep my distance from him. He doesn't show interest in me otherwise, so I relax a little. One morning, I wake up, and when I emerge from my room, everyone's staring at me and snickering behind their hands. I can't figure out what's going on. I rub my nose surreptitiously to make sure I don't have something hanging off of it, and my fly isn't down. My appearance isn't out of the ordinary, and breakfast is the normal, quiet affair. I fix Azar's food, clean the kitchen, and start to head back to my quarters. But a smirking guard in the hallway makes me pause. I can't figure out what's going on. Instead of heading back to my rooms, I go off in search of Boyd. My brother will know what the deal is. I can't find him inside, though, so I stick my head outdoors to check on things. That's when I see a bunch of the nomads standing around with guns. Boyd's with them, and he smirks at the sight of me.
Come to check on how things are going? We'll let you know if we need a refresher.
Refresher? What do you mean? I gaze from face to face, but I don't see anything that gives away what the hell he's talking about. Everyone stands around, guns loosely held in their arms. Someone looks like he's wearing a flak jacket. And there are a couple of metal...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?